If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download it Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
It is time to review Raw from Monday night in Louisville, Kentucky. Welcome all on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. If this is the first time you're hearing our voice on a Monday or a Tuesday morning, you could be enjoying us so much more on the Post Wrestling Cafe, where you get the XL edition of Rewind to Raw. Folks, we're 37 minutes deep. We just chatted about the life and times of Terry Brunk Sabu, what was more amazing, that WWE started off this show with a graphic dedicated to Terrence Brunk, or that the New York Times put out an article on the passing of Sabu? Terrence Brunk.
I wonder how he himself feels about Terrence.
I don't think he cared to be called Terry, period. So I don't know how Terrence Brunk would have... I will almost guarantee you that no person in the industry ever called him Terrence until WWE decided to honor his life.
I'm sure he's cussing at them from beyond, yes.
So that is on the XL portion, about 20 minutes on Sabu. Big article coming to Post Wrestling this week on the life and times of Terrence Brunk. As well, Jack Wannon joining us on the XL portion to chat about his live experience of Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling's Northern Rising card from Saturday night. I didn't get to ask you, did you watch any Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling?
I intended to. I simply did not have time between Mother's Day activities and just life. So I intend to throughout the rest of this week.
Yeah, I had to make choices this weekend. So I did see the best of the Super Juniors. I watched most of the UFC main card and Backlash. And you know what? At a certain point, you're like, that's all I can give, folks. I have nothing left in me to provide. So, but yes, check out Jack's report. And as always, postwrestlingcafe.com is where you get all the fun stuff going down here at the site. On Thursday this week, Rewind Away is going back. We're turning the clock back to September of 2003 for the September 18th edition of SmackDown. Why this random edition of SmackDown? Well, it was not random. It was the season premiere of SmackDown, featuring an Iron Man contest between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship. On this same card, Los Guerreros reuniting, going after the tag titles held by Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin. And the unofficial main event of the season premiere, it is Tori Wilson teaming with Nydia to take on Shaniqua in a 2-on-1 handicap match.
Those names bring me back, yes, to 2003?
2003.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Have you started?
I have not started, no.
You don't. Well, this is definitely a one-sitting watch.
Hopefully, yeah.
Okay. We'll find out. Way's Way's figuring out his new he also is figuring out how time zones and time change works, much like Dominic was.
I will more than likely watch it at 2 a.m. today. Yeah. Okay. While I stay up. Yeah.
The 2x 2 a.m. watch. All right, all of that, postwrestlingcafe.com. We are going to get into Raw tonight. WrestleTix reporting 10,034 tickets distributed, and we had a graphic for Sabu at the top. And then later in the show, they showed some still shots of Sabu. I don't know if they'll put something more extensive online after the fact. They have uploaded to the WWE Vault one of his tryout matches in 1993 against Scott Taylor, the future Scotty Too Hotty. This was like 2 weeks after he started in ECW with Todd Gordon and Paul Heyman, and he did three matches for the WWF, two against Scott Taylor and one against Owen Hart. And I'm going to publicly request that they add the Owen Hart match to the Vault. That's what I want to see. And that was the one Sabu was the highest on of the three.
Well, yeah, I was going to say it's cool footage, but I guess, like, I mean, if he didn't get the job, is it necessarily a match?
Well, apparently he had an offer and he opted not to take it. In his book, he stated he was offered the role of the Sultan. Now, this was 1993. Huh. They did the Sultan in 97. So, I mean, that's according to Sabu, but he opted to.
Could have been a gimmick they had planned.
Well, listen, you were heavily into WWF in 1993. Uh-huh. How would Sabu have fared in 1993 WWF? Like, obviously, he was not going to be the Sabu of ECW or FMW, but do you think that he could have fit into that era of WWF?
If he was going to be the Sultan, I don't think he would have lasted. He would have lasted as long as the actual Sultan gimmick did. So, maybe a blessing in disguise he did not take this offer.
On to the show. CM Punk begins. Big response for him. He is pissed off, but he is most pissed off at himself. Because this is not the first time Paul Heyman has turned on me, so they are acknowledging the 2013 turn when he was struck by a ladder by Paul Heyman. And
he also does the Sabu pose.
Oh, wow. That's I did miss that. So
this might have been at the end, actually. I didn't catch him in the moment either.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Jey Uso warned him about Heyman and calls Heyman a fat little snake and Seth Rollins a Timu CM Punk. I'm going to get my hands around Heyman's neck and squeeze until his eyes pop. And that's when Heyman appears and Punk yells, "Where are you at, Penguin?" And Heyman is flanked by Rollins and Braun, and Punk yells over the theme, "You're just a song, kid." And Rollins says how Punk made Heyman's life hell leading up to WrestleMania. "Punk, you are human excrement, and I hate you even more for costing me the title last week." And Punk vows that as long as I'm standing, you will never be champion. So Rollins accuses Punk of liking being the victim and wants to die a martyr. Well, we can make that happen. So he sends Braun to the ring to attack Punk. Rollins joins in. It's 2-on-1. Sami Zayn shows up, but they get the advantage once again when Heyman hands a chair to Rollins and Michael Cole screams, "They're going to assassinate CM Punk." Assassinate him right here in the middle of the ring.
Right. Okay.
He was not assassinated. He lived. Yeah. And Jey Uso saved him from the fatal shot, the fatal chair shot, and the three of them cleared the ring. And
I'm sorry, I never really know how to respond when you leave those gaps. He didn't actually mean he was going to assassinate him, John.
I think he did mean it. I think we just had Rollins say that you want to die a martyr, that can be arranged. And I think Michael Cole took that threat literally.
Mm-hmm. Well, so maybe better luck next time.
They cleared the ring, and that concluded our opening 20-minute segment. And I guess we can state now that they have added to Saturday night's main event CM Punk and Sami Zayn taking on Seth Rollins and Braun Breaker joining Jey Uso and Logan Paul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Incredible reaction for Punk. I think, though, for me, the most interesting person to watch in all of these segments is Sami Zayn. You know, his performance in all of these, his booking in all of these feels a little bit unsettling. And I think from the moment we saw, from the segment we saw with Jay and Jimmy celebrating, I think we can presume all of that sort of like tension is somewhat intentional. They're telling this, I think, potential heel turn with Sammy in a very unique, subtle way. Having it take place, I would say, largely with subtext in the in-ring segment and some background acting. And I think it's, for me, unsettling because it's very unlike the Sami Zayn character to just take a backseat as sort of like the third weakest member in this sort of like mini faction we've got between, like, you know, Jay and Punk. And now Sami Zayn just kind of like being the person to come out, get beaten up by Braun last week. This week he comes out and he's sort of like the line of defense that's easily thwarted by the heels. You couple this with like his failure to be on the WrestleMania card while his current best friend Jey Uso ends up, you know, becoming a champion, and that initial post-Mania segment heavily teasing his turn on Jey, it all seems to me like it is setting up this sort of story where he's failing and failing and failing, ultimately for him to explode on Jey Uso. So I'm finding him the most interesting to study in all of this.
Yeah, it's why I like that night after WrestleMania segment, and they just let it linger. Like, the camera stayed on them, and you were forced to assume that this was happening, and instead they're just parking that, and it's in the back of your mind, and you're just, it's leading you to watch all these segments with that kind of, that knowledge and the idea that it's coming, but they're going to really draw this out so for maximum impact, as they should. I think that just doing that turn out of nowhere the night after Mania, sure, it gets the big one night pop, but I think this is much more compelling to go this direction.
Yeah, and I think the Punk tag team for Saturday night's main event could be the night where he actually does the turn, or at least it should be a significant chapter in the Sami Zayn story.
I could certainly see the heels winning this match for that reason, get a big win with the two of them together, because I wouldn't want to be beating Rollins or Breaker at this point. And I think for the story, I think Zayn ending up taking the fall in this could be where you go. Pat McAfee makes his entrance 20 minutes into the show to announce he's been cleared to speak.
Well, I guess if somebody were to get beaten up so badly, he probably wouldn't be cleared to do much of anything.
Yeah, that would be a tough like exam to go through, like medically. It's like, how do you feel? It's like, I can't answer that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how I necessarily felt about this, because he kind of came out here without really looking any worse.
He tried to show, he's like, look how bruised I am. I'm like, it was like some redness.
Yeah, I mean, I understand like maybe wanting to just kind of...
Would you have kept him off this show?
I'm guessing he did his radio show today.
He did. Yeah, I guess it kind of is silly when you're right there on national television.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I would have had him sell on the radio show.
I'm sure. I didn't watch it. I'm sure he does. He always has done that. He's worn neck braces on there. So Penta and Chad Gable is our first match. Penta goes for a pescado and is met with a headbutt by Chad Gable. This is not him with a mask on. So this was him just like rocking his head into an oncoming target. And then he screams, Lucha Libre sucks, at the crowd as they go to break. And once they got going here, Gable holds on to the corner, avoiding a backstabber. This is after he has leaped off the top for a diving headbutt and is met with a code breaker. Gable gets control, beautiful moonsault off the top, and then Penta avoids the ankle lock, super kicks him, and Gable gets sent off the top and does a backflip, landing on his feet, and is right in position for a Mexican destroyer. This is how Jack Della Maddalena won the title on Saturday, if you missed it. Same thing.
Sorry, what is that?
He took Bilal Muhammad off the top of the cage, and he backflipped, and then he hit the Australian destroyer off the top of the cage.
Spectacular.
Wow. 11 minutes, 4 seconds, Penta wins. A fun match with these two.
I thought it was above average. Not necessarily a match that I thought was designed to hit like a pay-per-view high level. You know, to me, it was like an appropriate TV match. Meant to give you a bit of a story that were... I guess it's to show you that Penta can beat Chad Gable in a fair fight when he doesn't have the loaded mask. And I suppose it gives Gable a bit more motivation to continue screwing with Penta as El Grande.
You know where I think this has to go is like we're continuing. Like Michael Cole is calling out this. Chad Gable is obviously El Grande Americano. Mm-hmm. Adam Pearce is not falling for this either. So why doesn't Adam Pearce state, okay, Chad, you're such a big fan of this guy. Next week, you're teaming up with El Grande Americano to take on Penta and partner.
Or how about a match with Gable versus El Grande Americano?
Well, you could go that direction too. You could go that way too.
It should go to the King of the Ring, where Chad Gable is on one side of the bracket and El Grande Americano is on the other.
That'd be amazing.
And he ends up facing. They end up facing each other.
This would be a great Raid the Ring.
Raid the Ring. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And I mean, I feel like the punchline is that somehow it's not Chad Gable, and it is just somebody who happens to, you know, look very much like him from the neck down.
I'm sure you could find someone that at least looks like Chad Gable, probably not in the shape that Chad Gable is in. Like, you might need to give them send them to AJ Styles for a month to get them in shape. But I'm sure you could find someone with the face.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're bringing you three editions of Rewind Away, including an in-depth look at WrestleMania 32 from 2016, a 2003 edition of SmackDown featuring the Iron Man match between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar, and a special patron's pick where you get to choose what John and Wei review. MCU Later returns with a review of Thunderbolts. Pollock and Ting will sit down and talk. We've also got coverage of Wrestling Dontaku, Collision Course every Saturday night, and of course, XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. $6 a month gets you in the door at postwrestlingcafe.com. Perez and Julia do a promo. They are in the main event tonight against Io and Rhea Ripley. They state this division isn't safe anymore. Yeah, tell talent relations. And they didn't come to wait their turn. They're going for the women at the top, and we're going to make our own history. We are the future, and it starts tonight.
The team is I think a good idea simply for Julia to get some comfortable time, you know, on TV without cutting these.
That's
English
beautiful
promos.
Madness, Julia.
Beautiful madness, Julia. You know, Roxanne doing the speaking for her allows her to just kind of like be introduced to the audience. It feels like a proper call up at this point for these two. Are we still in the game where like they're sort of half in NXT? Like, are we sure that they're not just going to,
I don't think they're official. Like, Julia's not an official call up yet.
Oh, okay. But Roxanne is,
I believe so. Like she was, I think she's been up since like Elimination Chamber,
but she's still on NXT.
Yeah. She's going back and forth.
Julia, Roxanne for sure. Julia, I still question. I mean, I think there is a chance that they might give her a bit more time in NXT, but we'll see.
Judgment Day is in the back. Dominic just got off the phone with Liv, who's in Japan for her movie, and he's confused because she said good morning, and it's the evening. So Dominic then tells Finn Balor that he hesitated with the chair on Backlash, and Balor just says, you're sounding paranoid. Everything worked out fine, and I'm going to take care of AJ tonight for you. And he says, okay, sounds good. And the others try to explain how time travel works. And then Hulk Hogan came in to explain to Dominic how there's 400 days in a year if you want to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was a recap of Gunther and Pat McAfee. The crowd is on their feet chanting for Pat, and Pat states, I've got a lot of respect for Gunther. I think he has respect for us now too, Michael. Zayn sits down with CM Punk in the locker room and asks, are we good? Punk says, I'm having a hard time trusting anyone. And Zayn is too. But I trusted you at War Games, even though it was difficult. And things worked out well there. So let's work together. And they're like, okay, sounds good.
Yeah, Zayn's approach at least at this point is very, you know, true to his babyface character. There's really kind of nothing that's off about him when you're just strictly reading the script. But it's in like these sort of like very maybe again, I would say non-reactions that he gives in between the words that to me like feels off. And to that end, I think he's actually a great actor, you know, if this is the direction that they're headed towards, because I think he's, without necessarily using the words to say so, is able to tell you exactly what you should be knowing about his character.
What if they piece all these segments together and we get a documentary at the end when he does turn?
I'm still waiting for that first documentary, so maybe this will be they'll release a box set at the same time. Yeah.
The New Day are on commentary for American Made versus the War Raiders, and Michael Cole accuses New Day of cheating to beat the War Raiders at WrestleMania, and without skipping a beat, they call Michael Cole on Backlash. You guys tried to cheat against Gunther. How's that any different? I mean, checkmate in favor of New Day here. Ivar gets knocked off the apron, so Eric sends Brutus on top of Julius on the floor. He goes to look for his partner. No one is there. These War Raiders, they can't be having problems, can they? This one reduced the tag division by like 33%.
I would be concerned for either of them if they were to bring up this team.
Yes. So Julius takes Eric and just lifts him in the air for a vertical suplex on the floor. We come back from break. Everything has been resolved. Ivar is now in the ring and on offense. They end up hitting Ivar with a superplex moonsault combo. And then as Ivar kicks out, goes for the handspring and is caught with a double suplex, Eric is dealing with Woods on the floor. And then Kofi runs up to the corner, knocks Ivar off balance. And this leads to him being held up on the shoulders of Julius for the Brutus ball. And the Creeds get the win in 10 minutes and 27 seconds. What would this mean for the tag division and who would get the next title shot? Basically nothing.
Yeah, so logic would tell you that the Creeds would get the title shot, right?
Logic would. I don't know if this segment... Did you see the segment backstage with the teams? I think no. It was during a commercial. Yeah. So the War Raiders are later complaining to Adam Pearce about the New Day getting involved in their match, and they want another shot. So then the New Day comes in and says, don't cry about your losses. We don't cry about things. And so Pearce says, well, I have to go with the result. The Creeds get the shot. But you guys are getting on my nerves, so now it's a triple threat, and it's going to be all three teams.
Okay, so this match didn't matter.
It meant at all. Nothing.
I see. I thought the match was fine, but the division itself is so cold that I don't think the in-ring is necessarily the issue. Now, it is one of the issues, because compared to the SmackDown roster, this Raw tag division doesn't necessarily get the focus and nor like as much ring time as like the SmackDown wrestlers do to build to like significant matches. But it's the consistency that I think is the most important thing, and also an ability to develop personalities outside of the New Day and a little bit of the Creeds. You know, you don't really have so many like big personality driven teams on the show, and without the in-ring time at least like tell people, hey, like watch this because the wrestling is great, you're kind of left with nothing.
Yeah, I feel like the Machine Guns would be a nice shift over to this tag division that I don't think would harm the SmackDown division.
I think it would harm the Machine Guns. It wouldn't give them too many opponents to wrestle. You need a lot more than that.
I think they could be very helpful for the Creeds. I think you could match these guys with the, I mean, we're talking about three teams here. So
at this point, I would just consider putting the divisions together.
Well, I mean, that would be a logical conclusion, but I don't think one that they are moving toward. Yeah. Rollins is with Breaker and Heyman, and Rollins says that Punk and Zayn have no idea what he's capable of. And he whispers something to Bron Breaker about doing tonight. So Pierce walks up to Jay, tells him something, which we would learn in the next segment. And in the background, if you were paying attention, for the second week in a row, Finn Balor is seen talking with Roxanne Perez.
What? Could mean something, could mean nothing.
Jay Uso is out after...
What it could mean, I suppose, is I think we're in the process of seeing Dom break off from the Judgment Day, right? we're in the process of potentially seeing Dom turn babyface. Like, you can argue he might already be a babyface. They just kind of have to confirm it with Balor turning on him. And with Dom leaving, I could also see Liv leaving as well, because I think Liv might be ripe for like a babyface turn too, along with Raquel.
Well, so, do you remember what the background interaction was in the past with Finn Balor?
Liv and...
It was Liv. Yeah. And then Liv starts hitting on Dom, mm-hmm. and it messed up Dom and Rhea. So now he's going to try and utilize Roxanne to screw up Dom's relationship with Liv.
Oh, that actually would be very interesting. So what, have like Roxanne seduce Dom in order to break?
That would be the precedent. That's what we saw last time when the way this worked out. And there would be the motivation for Balor to, like, the problem is Liv, and he's going to get Roxanne to break them up.
I mean, I like the idea. I think it would be something for Roxanne, even though I don't know if, like, I've seen her play seductress before, but I mean, it worked for Liv as a role. Now, I think the difference this time would be that Dom would catch on and Liv would catch on, and it would actually be the two of them turning on Balor instead of actually being broken up. There's potential there, and you know, they're not doing these background interactions for nothing, I suppose.
Jey Uso comes out, and they push the social stats for last week's off-air angle with Logan Paul knocking out Jey Uso. I didn't see any social media stats bragged about for John Cena's AA to R-Truth at the press conference after.
We'll wait till Friday, I guess.
I guess so. Did you watch that?
I did watch the AA, yeah.
Crickets when he did that.
Well, it was a press room.
Exactly. Why?
Again, I can only imagine it's like Levesque's and maybe Fittings want to use their multimedia platforms in order to continue their story, so that it encourages the audience to not expect or to expect storytelling in everything. They should have saved it for speed. That's where they should have done it.
It should have been. He states that Logan is ducking him, but you can't avoid me at Saturday night's main event. I'm going to be champion afterward. And he's confronted by Gunther, who is hit with "you tapped out" chants. Any sign of, you know, him showing the respect to Pat McAfee that this was going to be some shift? I mean, he was right back to bully Gunther here. Mm-hmm. He claims Jey is not a natural champion. He's not used to being into this position. And since you like to talk, I'm surprised you haven't explained how the title is going to be handed to me after your match with Logan Paul, because Adam Pearce has made it official that I will get the winner on June 9th in Arizona. It's like June 9th in Arizona. So this will be on the Raw after Money in the Bank in a month.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, at this point, it's a WrestleMania rematch. Yes, I think there was even potential for it to headline another PLE, but I feel like it's a fine TV main event because it is a WrestleMania rematch.
And you want to juice the Netflix number, obviously, for some of these weeks. Like, Money in the Bank is going to have two ladder matches, and Cena's advertised for it. Mm. Like, that's your card. Like, that's your money show that, not literally, but, and then I guess they want to really build up this Raw, mm-hmm. which is also going to be like smack dab it, like deep into the NBA playoffs as well. So it's like the competition is going to be pretty significant by the time we get to June as well, if it coincides with an NBA playoff game. So Jey says, I'm going to run this place. I'm going to beat Logan. Then we'll run it back, and I'll leave you just like I did. This rematch the same way as WrestleMania as champion. And that was that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, Gunther, as always, just sounds tremendous here. I also think,
would Pat McAfee have gotten this title shot if he had won on Saturday?
Yes. The answer is yes. Now, what did Logan Paul do? Logan Paul beat AJ. Okay. So that's logical.
He's at least coming off a win.
Yeah. I thought it was a good segment, and I think it built up to a logical TV main event here. Now, it does unfortunately telegraph to me the Paul versus Jey winner, but maybe they'll give us a Logan Paul.
I would love Logan Paul and Gunther.
Well, I think they should at least give us some Logan Paul Gunther interactions.
I think they will. I think they will. They did that. That was one thing they did really, really well. I would say not so much the lead up to Mania, but the lead up to the Rumble, where they were doing a lot of those promo segments, the best being the Punk Cody one. And it gave you, I think for sure they will do that. God knows they've got 4 weeks here. What are they going to do with Gunther for 4 weeks?
Yeah. And whenever we do get to a Gunther babyface run, I think a Logan Paul match would have some of the same appeal as the Pat McAfee match.
Gunther would become a baby. Could you imagine Gunther just doing a promo running down Logan Paul, or Gunther doing a watch along of Paul American?
How about Gunther on his podcast?
Oh, I would love it.
That would make me sad. Gunther's having a sip of Prime and just like hurling.
They do the tribute to Sabu here with Cole and Pat speaking, and Michael Cole noting that, you know, he was a legendary rival of my good friend Taz that he mentions here. This is when the War Raiders do their segment leading to the triple threat. They didn't state when, but coming soon. Jackie Redmond interviews Ludwig Kaiser, who would be, I don't know.
Nothing going on with that.
No, no. Like, and when these segments happen,
the most he's had in recent weeks has been the mention from the Tiffany Stratton, Charlotte Flair segment.
That was it.
Yeah.
Literally the setup is you had this great year in 2024. You challenged for titles. You were with Gunther. You've done nothing this year. Oh, wait a minute. Something bigger is happening, and he doesn't even get to answer. And Bron Breakker has jumped Jey Uso, who is left laying as Sami Zayn and CM Punk run in. Yes, poor Kaiser.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many spots, and not everybody has a chance. At least, like, in since they're talking about it, maybe it suggests that they are priming him for something.
If only they had another show that had 180 minutes to fill every week.
Well, they somehow fill those 180 minutes.
Yeah, barely. Yeah. Finn Balor and AJ Styles. Balor's working on the ribs early before AJ hits a Ushiguroshi. JD gets involved, and AJ turns around into a small package, and Balor gets on offense here, goes for the coup de grace, misses, and his knee has been worked on after a calf crusher. Styles goes back to the calf crusher, rolls through into a Styles clash. Balor kicks out of the Styles clash. Michael Cole explains, I don't know if he got all of that, and we go to the replay, and he got all of that. Carlito's on the apron. JD is on the other side. So AJ knocks JD down. Balor avoids the phenomenal forearm and hits the 1916 for a two count when Penta appears, taking out Carlito and JD after going off of JD's back into a Mexican destroyer on the floor. That leads to the phenomenal forearm, and AJ wins in 17 minutes. They certainly got the time here. It was a nice match between the two. It was, it was once they did the near falls, you got reaction from the crowd. The rest, it was like, this was not a super heated crowd outside of, I would say, the opening segment when you had Punk and your big stars out there. But
I thought the crowd reaction for like 95% of this match was pretty cold. And maybe it's only surprising to me because at one point this used to be a bit of a dream match here, you know, between the two Bullet Club leaders. Now it's just like really another match on Raw. And I think that more tells you like how little Bullet Club nostalgia means now, at least, you know, when we're talking about like
the, I mean, they are iterations. Just coming off the Young Bucks and the Good Brothers teaming up on Friday, so I mean there is a come down.
Does that actually mean that much for those New Japan crowds? I wonder. I don't know.
2,000 people, man.
Well, when it's the Good Brothers, I guess it's totally different. Yeah,
yeah. But I think like this is a perfect example, I think, of a lot of like, I won't even say so much for WWE PLEs, but like for TV, it's like you look at this match and again, it's like the audience, they're just waiting for like the big kickouts, and then boom, they get like they're just primed for like the big, it's like they're trained not to care until they get to the big kickouts at the end.
Or the interference. I mean, when you have
two
Judgment Day members on the ringside, I mean, the crowd knows you're not going to get the finish until you one of them runs in, right? You know, this is a crowd, at least for TV, that's expected to receive story in their matches, and the story in this case comes in the form of these run-ins. So I would also say like matches can overcome that if they're exceptional in ring, and this this was not exceptional in ring.
I like the match. Decent. Like it was good for the time it had, but it did suffer from just an audience that was not like going crazy for it. And it's, you know, for these Judgment Day matches, I think there's also like, yeah, you know what you're getting in these matches
too. Yeah, and the story implication is that Dom was not here. You had Colin McAfee continue to question JD throughout the match. Where's Dom? And JD just ignored him. So there are tensions between them. We don't exactly know where Dom is. And I imagine Balor will be blaming Dom for not helping him.
Maybe his watch was on Tokyo time.
It could have been, yeah. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Becky Lynch is out, and she cut this amazing promo. I was not beaten on Saturday. Lyra was beaten because one of us had to go to the hospital. I made Lyra the best version of herself, and I gave her the best match of her life. She's never mattered more than she does right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, putting points on the board here.
It's true.
She has been manipulated by Lyra and all of you people because I left because you asked me to. I heard your response when I won the women's title last year. We used to be into this together. You saw yourselves in me, and it was us that went to the main event of WrestleMania until I won. And then you could no longer see yourselves in me because all you people know is failure. I like myself. I liked myself more when I was away from you, and I no longer have to listen to your lies. I am what I say I am. Am I selfish? Yes. Am I greedy? Yes. Cutthroat? Yes. Now, all the women in the back are going to find out what it's like to be held down by the man. Mm-hmm. I thought this was excellent. I thought she was just tremendous here.
She was great. I thought Becky here gave us one of the most logical explanations of the psychology behind why a crowd would turn on a babyface that is perhaps booked too strongly. Why do we turn on babyfaces that are too successful? Because we relate to losers, because we are losers, okay? Most of us are not champions in whatever field that we're looking to, perform in. We are not, most of us, exceptional people. And I thought she crystallized this in a way that I've never heard a heel do so simply before. So I
think this would have done wonders if Charlotte cut this promo like 2 months ago.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't know if Charlotte is capable, though, of doing it, a promo like this. But I also thought this week's promo, unlike last week for me, I thought she had her delivery be a bit more dynamic, where I thought there was a bit more of a ramping up from kind of being a bit more mellow until you kind of really get to like a high register of energy. So really strong, very clever heel work here from Becky. She is somebody who I think is very evident, puts a whole lot of creative effort into any iteration of, you know, character that she has, whether it be babyface or as a heel, like we saw with Big Time Bex, and now seemingly with this iteration as well.
Following that is another tape promo with Rusev, who reflects on last week's match. I didn't want to do that to Otis. I just want to go home and be rich, but I can't leave my brothers until they all wake up. The people don't care that you miss your family. You people cheered Akira Tozawa being hurt, and still he seeks your approval because he lets the sheep control the wolves. And get off your knees. Rusev can see right through you people, and it will hurt him to hurt you. But you would rather fall to my hand than fall into the abyss. And my only issue with this was that this felt like a lesser version of the promo Becky just cut immediately before this.
In what way?
In that it's you people that are, Tozawa is begging for approval from these fans. They are not the ones that care about you. It's just like calling out the hypocrisy of fans. This one, it was way too but most, same beats.
But like 90% of heel promos are about that, though.
Not back to back like this. It just felt to me as just poor placement in immediately following this really great Becky promo. So Tozawa wants a rematch with Rusev, but he's not cleared. So then he walks off with Natalya and Maxine. So we're going to have to wait for Rusev and Tozawa.
If it was similar to the Becky promo, well, there was a clear winner, which one was more effective. I mean, I did dislike the Rusev promo, but, you know, I thought he gave us something more than just maybe a riddle, okay? Like, he gave us a bit more detail about his aims. He wants all of his fellow wrestlers to stop caring about the crowd, and somehow he feels beating them up will somehow make them realize that. It's an okay gimmick for a re-debut, but I don't think it's like grabbing me that much or anything.
Sheamus enters the office and he wants to face Grayson Waller next week. And dude, Adam Pearce, he must have thought like Sheamus and Grayson Waller. I mean, is it WrestleMania already? Yes, you can have this match next week and it's official.
He called this a banger. Sounds like a banger. And we'll see. We'll see. It's possible. At this point, like Waller in theory, I mean, they're doing something amongst themselves, but it's so inconsistent that it's hard to care about. But their role is to really just kind of like be set up guy for whatever program Sheamus might actually have coming up next, right? And with the positioning of this segment and his interaction with Tozawa, I wonder if they might be setting up Sheamus and Rusev. Yeah. Seems logical.
Sure. I mean, God, that would expand this tag division by leaps and bounds. Why not?
In terms of story for Rusev, it would make sense. Like at this point, Sheamus is sort of a character who is giving his body for the entertainment of the audience, and Rusev would have a direct target to try to convert to. How dare you work so hard? You know, you should be having shittier matches.
Maybe they can request that their producer is Chris Park.
Into the abyss. I feel like are we to interpret the abyss as code for AEW and is
that's Rusev, absolutely how it was implied the first time.
Is Rusev's aim now to make sure that
don't get cut?
Yeah, don't get cut, so you have to go to AEW.
Yeah, he should have talked about the releases last week. So next week, Raw is in Greenville, South Carolina. Besides the what will clearly be the main event of Sheamus and Grayson Waller, we have Styles and Penta against Finn Balor and JD, qualifying matches for the Money in the Bank, and Jey Uso versus Braun Breaker in a non-title match. Mm-hmm. On to the main event, Io Sky, Rhea Ripley against Roxanne Perez and Julia. Rhea and Perez were in nearly identical gear, and Roxanne Perez was her mini-me throughout this whole thing. Like okay. it was crazy how similar their outfits were.
I guess black is in.
I guess so. I mean, yeah. If you put these two, like if they turned their backs to you and you looked like it was, at certain points I had to double check to make sure which was which that I was watching.
Interesting.
Michael Cole dropping the stardom credentials of one Julia. They build up to a hot tag to Ripley, and Perez lands a Rana off the top. They manage to double-team Rhea, and then Ripley catches Perez in the corner and just drops her onto the mat. Sky is in with Julia and hits the over-the-moonsault. Perez is in for the save. We had multiple save spots here. The Northern Lights bomb was hit by Julia. Ripley makes the save, and then Perez comes off the top, but Ripley shoves Julia into the line of fire, so Perez takes out her partner by mistake, and that leads to Rhea headbutting and a riptide on Julia. So it is Ripley pinning Julia to win the match, and then as Io and Ripley's arms are raised, Ripley is just staring a hole into the women's title, and so subtle.
Yeah.
Like, why didn't they just put a subtitle? I want a rematch. In 2 months on Raw in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I guess they do want to make it so obvious that...
hey, morons at home, this is what we're building to. Are you stupid?
This is not necessarily the Sami Zayn approach, although I think in most forums, the Sami Zayn approach is already still pretty obvious to many. So,
yeah, this ain't Roxanne Perez and Finn Balor. This one we want you to make sure you catch.
I thought the match was like, it was good, but like for some reason I didn't enjoy it as much as like the EO singles matches I've been seeing in recent weeks. Now this, again, very good. It's not hard to find that much to complain about, but for some reason I just connected that much more with like the EO singles matches. But this was necessary because you are starting the build towards EO versus Rhea Ripley. And I see this, I see the reaction to like Julia, which is like, it's not bad, but it's not the star reaction that I think maybe like we would have expected for like a former NXT champion, somebody who came into NXT at least with a lot of hype. Like in this case, people didn't like no reaction at all to the Northern Lights bomb.
It wasn't even called that either on commentary.
Yeah. Just... So like I continue to question the timing of bringing her up at a point where she really has yet to develop her own personality in NXT. You know, she had the title run, but it wasn't really a notable run. Or at least not to the point where like you've built up enough hype. And I would say for her, you haven't, like she herself, I don't think fully understands what her character is, especially being such
and
a fresh heel.
And they just turned her over the last month as well. So she's got that going for her too. It's like, she's kind of just been brought here off the reputation of, well, it's Julia from NXT. And if you were aware of her beforehand, you know, it's, and let's be honest, like it was not a great crowd either for this main event. You could argue if this was maybe strong enough for the whole show to be built around based off of this. I thought they did a good job leading up to this over the last few weeks, but it was
Io and Rhea are big enough stars that I think you could justify, you know, that like putting this on last. And I think Roxanne is doing really well. But Julia is the one I do question because she's somebody that I think would have really benefited from more time in NXT, and they could still give her that after this.
Well, that was Raw, and I mean, we've only got next week, and then they've got Saturday night's main event. So we have two matches already, and I imagine we'll get some additions on SmackDown this week, and then it's into the build-up for Money in the Bank as mm-hmm. well. Like, this is a... satisfying episode of Raw, I would call it. Some sure. I would say the strong points, I really enjoyed that Becky promo. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed AJ and Balor, but I don't think it was anything to drop what you're doing, and it was no ninja special. I don't have too much to complain about match wise or like it's a very good opening segment that they had to set up the tag for Saturday night's main event, but it was it was lacking like a big spark overall. Mm-hmm. And part of that was like you had 11,000 people. They did not sound like 11,000 people.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. This felt like a very average Raw to me. And that's not even to say these days an average Raw is bad at all. It just didn't necessarily have like your big standout segments. I agree. I thought the Becky promo was strong. I think you're getting like good continued teasing towards some of the other programs here, like Sami Zayn, whatever's going on with him. Dominic and Finn Balor, you know, continues to be moving in a certain direction, but average is what I would say.
And Rusev and Tozawa.
Oh, of course, yes.
Yeah. So maybe that'll be on June 9th as well.
Maybe. Yeah.
Give them a month. Yes. All right. Well, everyone, that's our thoughts on Raw. We're going to be shifting over to feedback on the cafe, but let's quickly go over some things. I do want to mention that over the weekend, we had Collision Course dropping on Friday with Kate and John Cena going through Thursday night's episode, and Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson doing a review of New Japan's Resurgence event. That is up for all members at postwrestlingcafe.com. This coming week, we've got a new Rewind Away dropping on Thursday with our review of the SmackDown season premiere of 2003, highlighted by the Iron Man match between Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar, which they did do the full 60. It is edited. They had to reduce it for commercials on, but they legit did 60 minutes on that particular SmackDown. And there's, people might remember the fact Angle's sister died the day before this match. So there is a massive weight that he is going into this match dealing with that personal tragedy as well. So we will be going into all of the notes from this particular week in WWE history and all the stories happening in and around SmackDown during this particular era. So look out for that on Thursday. And
John's story about Sabu coming out tomorrow.
Postwrestling.com. Yes. So look out for that. Several thousand words on Terrence Brunk coming your way. I don't think I will be using Terrence Brunk at all in this particular story. So look out for that as well. Thanks to everyone. Hey, subscribe on the YouTube channel, like the video, circulate, and we are going to now head on over to forum.postwrestling.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If your brain is at full capacity with to-dos, birthdays, dinner plans, meet Skylight Calendar. It syncs your entire family's schedule onto a sleek digital display, so you focus on important things, like where you left your coffee. Right now, Skylight is offering our listeners $30 off their 15-inch calendars by going to skylightcal.com/talk. Go to skylightcal.com/talk for $30 off your 15-inch calendar. That's skylightcal.com/talk.